Everybody sing that shit. So yeah, it's episode 2 of The Breakdown, and we have best-selling author Carl Vernon, and it's weird like sitting here talking to you because the only time like I'm familiar with listening to your audiobook Anxiety Rebalanced. Okay. Like that's all I've got in my head. It's just like that's
you've
the
got you've just got my voice in your head, Billy. Billy, you've got to do this. Billy, you've got to do that. Now you can see me as well. It's double bloody trouble, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, man. But it's good. It's a very good. Well, I've only obviously heard the audiobook, but that's something I always used to turn back to it. Like if I was struggling.
Do you like it?
I love that book.
Is that Anxiety Rebalance, right?
I think the thing for me, like, it's being able to relate to, because you go into quite some detail, like being stuck in hotel rooms when you're on training courses, stuff like that. Like that, for me, I think that's what, like, that's why my channel. And...
Do you want to hear a bit of irony about that, Billy?
Come on.
Let's do it. Do you know, I'm actually a naturally very private person.
Mm-hmm.
And to release that, in and of itself, that book, that was a really big deal for me. And initially I released it or was going to release it with a lot less personal details. So you notice a lot of the start of the book is about my personal journey.
Yeah.
I continue it throughout the book, but it's, you know, the about me is very much sort of front loaded, right?
Mm.
And I was reluctant to do that at first because I am such a private person, but my wife encouraged me and said, look, if you're going to really connect with people and you're going to really help them, then you need to think about sharing your whole story here. Right.
I think it's key.
It was absolutely fun. I can look back in hindsight now, Billy, because obviously a lot of water's under the bridge, certainly from a personal journey perspective and what I do today, you know, being a coach for the last 10 years. But a fundamental, absolutely key part of this, and it wouldn't have reached number one on Amazon, I've got no doubt about it, if I hadn't have been so specific with my personal experience. The amount of feedback that I still get today, Billy, about, it's like reading my own bloody story. It's like listening to what I went through. It's like going through the exact same things that I did. And that's the feedback that I get back. I'm incredibly thankful for that.
Yeah. That's the bit. It's because it gets you hooked because you know that you can relate, and then it makes you want to listen on and learn.
And do you know what? On that point as well, Billy, it was actually, I would go as far to say it was the best decision I ever made.
Yeah.
Was to make that choice to be more open and and share it all. Because, I mean, it's quite detailed. I mean, I was in foster care as a kid.
Mm.
I was homeless for a little time as a kid. You know, I've been through some challenges. I've been through some hardship. And, you know, when you've been crippled by anxiety for 15 years, you tend to go through a lot of BS with that and everything that's connected with it, right?
That's where I'm at the minute. I'm 15 years in.
So you're 15 years in?
Yep.
Where are you on your journey then, Billy? Where are you?
Well, I always say that I haven't made much progress, but like when I say that, I get shot down by people in comments because they can see a difference in me. But I just don't seem to measure progress. I don't know why.
What's the biggest challenge?
Just going out. It's still going out.
So you say just going out. That's quite a big deal, isn't it? I mean, we have to go out, don't we?
I can go out in the car. I can go out in the car anywhere. Like I go drive around. Like me and my girlfriend went to Skeg Vegas earlier this year.
Right, you have to highlight me about it. What the hell's that?
Skegness.
Skegness.
You've heard of Skegness.
Of course I've heard of bloody Skegness. I've never heard it called Skeg Vegas before. That's a classic. That's the UK version of Las Vegas, isn't it?
Yeah.
How bloody crap it is. How was it? Was it good?
It was good, yeah. Like we only went for one night in a hotel, but we went bowling, went round all the arcades and stuff. I haven't done that for years. If I go somewhere, usually I have to go for a week. It takes me 3 days to get settled in. I have to stay in the accommodation, you know, get me...
What is it specifically that's going on? How is it manifesting for you?
Fine with that, but like for me to go to Asda around the corner, it's not something that I even attempt anymore. I think because I made so much progress, it's just
So look, let me share my personal experience. When I was deep in high anxiety, I'd go up to the, I'd drive, again, I wasn't too bad in cars generally. I mean, you hit the motorway and you'd cut those sudden thoughts like, shit, I'm in a car. Or, you know, a lorry would be a little bit too close to you, right? And you'd think, or, you know, you just get these thoughts. But generally, I was all right in a car. As soon as I rocked up to a supermarket, you know, I'd go up and legs. Mm-hmm. Turn to jelly.
Yep.
And you just get this sense of just being, you know, like derealism, depersonalization, whatever you want to call it, like just a sense of things aren't real. And actually being in the supermarket, and again, look, I say about this in Anxiety Rebalance as well, where I talk about it. It was a big deal. I didn't like supermarkets at all. I mean, it's still not a favored destination. I wouldn't go out of my way to go to a supermarket now. Mm-hmm. But do I panic? Do I suffer high anxiety when I go? No, I don't. What's the fundamental difference, Billy? Well, look, let's get straight to it. Why don't we do it, right?
Let's do it.
It's perspective. Mm-hmm. How I choose to see things. There's a chapter, I don't know if you remember it from listening to the audiobook, Billy, but I call it I Forgot to Be Anxious. Don't know if you remember that one, where I share my experience about what happened in the supermarket. So as I was in the supermarket, it was my wife's birthday at the time. I was still in high anxiety. I still had all these horrible symptoms going on. But I decided to brave it, go to the supermarket and just get it done. I had the shopping list in my hand. And I'm darting around the aisles, just picking up the ingredients. And I remember standing in the middle of the aisle, just literally within seconds thinking to myself, why am I not panicking? Why am I not feeling anxious like I always do? I had to remind myself to be anxious. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I did that, Billy, boom, just the symptoms consumed me.
I've done that so many times. Yeah.
Aisles felt like they were closing in on me. And all the usual symptoms hit me, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had to remind myself, but do you know what I did? What I would normally do is I'd drop the basket, run straight for the exit.
Yep.
Yeah, just get the hell out of there because I'm really, you know, again, this is part of the discovery of this journey. What is it really that is the fear? Mm-hmm. It's the fear of what other people are thinking.
Yep.
Embarrassing yourself, the fear of passing out, the fear of all these things related to these things. And that's really what gets us running.
Yeah.
Is, and again, I think you mentioned it earlier, that one of the standout things for you about anxiety rebalance is what I call the DP rule. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to relate and pin back all our fears to back to two primary fears, the fear of death and the fear of people, hence the DP rule.
Yeah.
You can think about anything that you're worried about right now, anything that you're fearful of, anything that you're anxious of right now, and they will always come back to at least one or both of those two things. So when I'm standing in the supermarket in the middle of that aisle, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but the thing that I was really anxious about, the thing that I was really fearful of, was being really bothered about what other people were thinking. Mm-hmm. You've got to ask yourself that question as well, Billy.
I don't know. I don't know whether I'm bothered about what other people
Not many think. People do, but let me tell you, you know, when people come to me for coaching, it astounds them.
Yeah.
Because I help them realize just how deep-rooted that in itself goes and how it influences our lives. I mean, again, off the back of that DP rule, you know, that's why I wrote You Care Too Much, more based on social anxiety, right? Yeah. The reason I did that is because we would think with those two primary fears, Billy, the fear of death and the fear of people, the obvious one that comes out of that is the fear of death.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd think that that's the superseding one, most of us, right?
Yeah.
It's not. It's the fear of people. That's the number one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, because I do exposure stuff and I still do it now. In fact, we went out the other day walking the dog and, like, we've got this area in my local town. It's like the castle grounds.
Yeah.
And we're walking down this cycle path and it's nice and quiet, like empty. There's not many people, a few geese. But then we cut back and end up by the children's playground area, walk down that bit. And I can just see that there's like, I mean, there's not a crazy amount of people, but there's a lot more people than there was on the other one. And instantly my thoughts are like, need to go back that way.
Like even so like, now what we're doing, this is good, because now you're starting to get what I call root cause stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right, how can you fix something if you don't know what it is you need to fix?
Yeah, because I've never had a problem, like, socially. Like, I can talk to people usually and that, but...
That's it. We like, can do this.
I remember on holiday a few years ago, we'd just been to the chip shop, and we were walking down this road, I can't even remember where it was, Hunstanton, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking down this road, everything was fine, and then I seen this family walk out from, like, round the side of their caravan, and then as we were walking towards them on the same road, and when we got to within about 30, 40 feet, I could feel my legs starting to go jelly, you know, my breathing changed, everything, even though I weren't, like, I'm not bothered. Never been, I used to work in a bar and like serving people, but something's changed because I never used to have that issue. It was always just agoraphobia for me, like the fear of panic.
But, yeah. But do you know what? Anyone like yourself, Billy, anybody who's listened to this, you know, the question I'm going to ask you, and I want you to really become more self-aware of,
mm-hmm.
is how much you're worrying about what other people think.
Yeah.
You won't be thinking about it. And I'll tell you why you're not thinking about it. You're not thinking about it because it's so deep-rooted within us. It's part of our culture.
Mm.
We're so used to it. We're born with it. We're born with this innate need for approval from other people.
Yeah.
Right? And because we've got that, we grow up from a very young age looking for people's approval. And when we do that, we get very used to it. And if you look at things like social media, they are just emphasizing the point that I'm making here.
Yeah,
they're just a platform that emphasizes what everybody is doing and thinking. And mm-hmm. if you look at how social media operates, that'll tell you everything that you need to know about how we want to impress other people, mm-hmm. how we want to do it, how we get endorphins by likes and shares and all that other bollocks.
Yeah.
That's why... Over the last 10 years that I've been coaching, Billy, I developed something called DSA, Direct Subconscious Awareness. This is my coaching model.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I decided to throw a lot of the other stuff out the window, so to speak, is because so many people like myself and my personal journey have tried things like CBT, NLP, hypnotherapy.
Yeah.
And what they tend to do is they might make a bit of progress, but they just keep hitting this brick wall. Bang, 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 keep hitting it. And it's just a period of time, a matter of time before they keep hitting it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are fundamental reasons for that. And again, I was on that same journey. I tried all those different things. If you told me at the time to put my head in a vice for 2 weeks and that would work, I'd probably bloody do it, Billy. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's a lot of pain to go through high anxiety. So you try all these different things. The reason I developed what I call DSA is because of what I mentioned earlier. There are fundamental things that make it very different to things like CBT, NLP, hypnotherapy. It's not got any of that involved in it.
Mm.
What it's about is I'm less inclined, Billy, to get you lying down on a couch and telling me what you were doing when you were 4 years old. The past is important. It brings us to where we are today.
Yeah.
But it don't define us because with like my experience, for example, I'm working class lad, single parent, time in foster care, a lot of challenges around that. The past defined us. I'd be fucked.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a coach, what I'm more interested in is what you want to achieve moving forward. And that's the fundamental difference, Billy. You know, when I was sitting down in front of counselors and therapists and God knows what else I tried, the thing that's really lacking there, the thing, look, let's not be bad. Where it can be good is that it can help you face a lot of things that you might be burying, a lot of skeletons that you might need to be dealing with. But DSA as a model for me is about coaching. It's about empowerment. What a lot of these things can do when you start to peel away the layers, if you like,
mm-hmm.
start unmasking what the true root cause, like I was saying to you earlier.
Yeah.
When you start to do that, what it can do and what it will do for most people, Billy, is make them into victims. They will become a victim of circumstance. Oh, that's why I'm like that. That's why I'm like this. That's why I'm like that. What I aim to do through coaching is to empower you to say, well, look, here's the insight. This is what's really going on. Shine a nice big light on this. Like I just did with you, just got you thinking a little bit about what's really going on in regards to supermarkets and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
but then empower you to start to make the steps to overcome it.
Yeah, yeah.
But understand as well, Billy, that by doing that, you need to understand that you're already working from a platform. You've already got so many positives going on, so many things that you've already overcome that have made you who you are today. Mm-hmm. You don't have to scrap that. You don't have to start from the beginning. You just have to redesign, reshape, refocus to start to get to where you want to be. When they design a new car, they don't completely scrap the old model.
No, of course.
No, they just reshape, redefine, refocus on where they want to be. So in other words, Billy, you know, if you're going through what you're going through with supermarkets and things like that, you need to work from what's working, but then understand and get insight and be empowered to start to move forward with where you want to be, if you want to go there. Mm-hmm. That's another question, Billy, do you?
I don't want to go to the supermarket. But that's just because I do my shopping online.
Do you want to go out without feeling anxious?
100%. Yeah, it's annoying. It's got to the point where it's just... like, I've almost given up on attempting now. I go out when I have to. But I can have days where I can just go out and not feel anxious at all and do anything. But then it's those days, like, because I concentrate on my symptoms so bad, like dizziness and jelly legs, they're the two for me.
And if but it's because they're overwhelming, though, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. If they're present with me on any day, like, it doesn't matter what it is, I can struggle doing anything. Like even standing washing up, that can be a task.
So if you came to me as a client, here's what I would say immediately off the back of that, Billy. I would say to you, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And the reason I would say that is because based on my own personal journey, you can't just flick a switch on stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. Can you shift perspectives? Can you change your mind and make a different decision immediately? Of course you can. You can do that straight away.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you're not going to worry and focus on the same things that you've been worried and focusing on? No, of course it don't. And that's why I want to offer you immediate reassurance. See, with stuff like that, I class them as the symptoms. And again, this is a chapter from Anxiety Rebalance, mm-hmm. Where I call it like magic. Mm-hmm. All anxiety-related symptoms and things in relation to anxiety and the problems that come with it, all its symptoms and the things related to it can drop, like I say, like magic or like dominoes or whatever you want to call it, as soon as you start to deal with the more root cause stuff. Mm. And this is where we get it backwards and why a lot of people struggle to move forward. Mm-hmm. It's because they look at it the other way. I've got to tackle all my symptoms. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And because they find it so difficult, they just think, oh, bollocks to it. It's too hard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just like you just said, Billy, I'm resigned to it now.
I kind of.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is why, and it's understandable because it can be, I was in this same loop. I was in same cycle and I was in it constantly over years and years and years. 15 years in, like we said, Billy, fulfilling the same patterns, fulfilling the same cycles. And I was trapped in those cycles because I was trying to deal with these symptoms. I was trying to go for really the most difficult part. I was going after the things that weren't really ever going to make the real difference. Yeah, and when I thought that it made a bit of a difference for a short period of time, I got frustrated because then I kept hitting that brick wall that I've mentioned. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. We keep hitting the brick wall because we're not dealing with the more root cause stuff, like caring too much about what people think.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense. That's it.
Makes sense, huh?
No, it does. It does. Cause I'd never think about that, but you're right. Like you can't control the way that like your legs feel like jelly, or you can't control that moment of dizziness, but you can control whether you actually care about what's happening. You can control whether you're freaking out about some woman in the queue looking at you, you know?
Exactly right. You know, the analogy that I use, Billy, when it comes to, because I use the analogy of what it means to be a victim and what it means to take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That again is a very fundamental piece in this pie to help people change perspective, because being a victim is incredibly deep rooted as well.
Mm.
We don't sometimes appreciate how deep rooted that can go.
Mm-hmm.
And even at my worst times of anxiety, Billy, when I was locked up in my bedroom, didn't want to get out of bed, if somebody had come along to me at that point and said, "Carl, you're being a victim," I would have told them to do one, to piss off. Even at that time, who wants to be called a victim? It's a horrible term, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's got very negative connotations. But that's exactly what I was, Billy. I was a victim. I was a victim to my circumstance. I was a victim to my life. I was a victim to my thoughts. And it was only when I really started to appreciate where I wasn't taking responsibility and actually started to take responsibility that things started to change. So what you just said about what you can take responsibility for. Someone comes along to you, Billy, never met them, never seen them in your life, come along, slap you across the face.
It's a bit harsh.
Should you take responsibility for that?
It's not my fault.
It would be very, very harsh to suggest that you should.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Of course. Yeah. But what you can do is you can take responsibility for how you react to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's within our choice. We allow our emotions to dictate who we are, which normally means that they control us. Mm-hmm. So in many circumstances, someone comes across and slaps you, they're going to get a slap back. Yeah. Or there's, at the very least, they're going to get, "Why the did you do that?" Yeah. Or something in that manner. Right. Yeah. The point I'm making here, Billy, is that we can't take responsibility in a sense of thinking we can take responsibility for other people's actions, what they do. That's a good example, because people are people. We're going to do different things.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can do is take responsibility for how we react to what we do. And you made a really good point about what you said earlier about, you know, going out and taking responsibility for the fact that it wasn't necessarily the woman and where she was or what she was doing. It was how it was your perception about it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And it was that strong influence that was dictating where you were, what was happening. And that's where, again, in regards to taking responsibility, when we start to understand what it really means, we can start to make more positive choices about it going forward and be less of a victim.
I think it's just, like, for me at the moment, it's almost a motivation thing as well. Like, I feel kind of lazy, which is harsh on myself, maybe. But I feel kind of lazy.
Refraining? Are you refraining from using the term depression, or are you open and happy to use that term?
I would if I felt depressed, but I don't particularly. Like, I'm quite happy. I'm happy in life. Got a good family.
What do you think depression is?
Depression for me is just feeling like there's no positive outlook, nothing to look forward to. It's all doom and gloom, just nothing.
Okay. So in the rebalance scale, again, referring to anxiety rebalance here, Billy, on the rebalance scale, so you've got one end of the scale that I call high anxiety and panic, which is the higher end of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the lower end of the scale is what I call a little bit more of the depression side. But again, what do I define as depression?
Mm-hmm.
Low energy.
Mm-hmm.
See, what you're basically saying there, Billy, above and beyond anything else, is connected to energy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because I feel like I can't be arsed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you like for generally getting up and or exercising and stuff like that.
So I should, but I don't do exercise. I'm having a torrid time with sleep at the moment because my girlfriend starts work at like 6 a.m. So I'm getting up at 5 a.m. every morning. I'm going to bed at like 8, but I'm waking up at 1 in the morning, something like that.
So there's a biology thing here, Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is that when we aren't as physically active,
yeah,
generally,
mm-hmm.
whether it be just walking, going for a walk in the park. And we're not talking sticking on your spandex and going down to the gym. Obviously, it's good for you in a lot of senses. Not towards the spandex bit. I don't know, Billy, whatever floats your boat. You know what I'm saying? I ain't judging anybody here, Billy, you know. But, you know, exercise in general, going to the gym, obviously, it's all cliche. Don't need to go into that. It's obviously very, very good for you. But what happens is when we don't move, when we don't use our bodies generally as much as we would, our brain is in a constant loop and sending us messages. And the biology is that it's saying to your overall body, you do not have to produce as much energy. And then when we get into that cycle, and again, this is all it is, by the way, is a cycle of then our energy naturally getting lower, because it will. When we're not as physically active, we go on a go slow. That's what happens.
Yeah, of course.
So our energy is getting depleted. So then we feel like we don't want to do as much now. So that feeds into this cycle again. And then what happens when we feel like that? We don't sleep properly.
Yep.
We don't eat properly. We don't do all these things that we should be doing. Again, cycle, 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 cycle. So then it ultimately gets this point where we just... at the very raw end of it, feel like we just can't, fuck it. I can't, I'm tired. And you feel tired pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
And then how's that translated? It's translated into just feeling pretty lackluster in general, unmotivated, unpassionate, on everything.
Also leads to, oh God, why am I so tired? Like anxiety.
Which... anxiety feeds off a vulnerable mind, as does panic. Right? I call it the psychological bully. This bully that resides in our mind, he's looking for any opportunity where you're weak, like any bully does. When he sees opportunities to pounce on you, he does it. And he does it to keep your comfort zone as shrunk as possible, so it keeps the job of keeping you alive easier. He's lazy. So when you're in a vulnerable state of mind, when you're feeling weaker, he'll pounce on it and he'll bully you. And that, and again, it's just part of this cycle, part of this cycle. And then we wonder why we get to a point where we don't even want to leave our house. Where our comfort zone's so small and shrunk, we get to a point where we think, I just, you know, is it even worth doing that? Oh, is it worth doing this? Is it worth doing that? And there's a challenge here. It's a massive challenge, because I understand how difficult that cycle is, Billy, because I've been in it endless times myself. It's this, like, do you know what it is? The way I describe it is, it's like anxiety, the bullying, all these things. It overcomplicates everything. It wants things to be complicated, mask it, layer it, because it means that I can at least be in denial. We hate the idea that something actually might be simple and straightforward. The simple and straightforward thing about these type of cycles are the definition of insanity by Einstein. You know what that is?
Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
You got it.
Boom.
Does that resonate?
I do seem to be in that pattern. Like, I go in this loop, I make a bit of progress, I have a bit of a wobble, back down there, let's go again.
But is that, that's a pattern in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because what we do, if we think about what a personality is, what is a personality? A personality is just simply something that we've been doing over a long period of time.
Yeah.
It's our thoughts, it's our habits, it's who we are. And it's just, as we keep acting these things out for long enough, then they just create who we are today. What we don't appreciate, especially when it comes to things like anxiety and worry, is that with my clients, I tell them that it's an addiction. And they think, oh, that, not really looked at it like that before. But we tend to see things like smoking, drinking, drugs, all these vices easily as addictions. When you're not doing something, you go looking for something to do when you're not doing it. That's an addiction. When you're not worrying, what do you do? Go looking for something to worry about. When you're not feeling anxious, you have to remind yourself to be anxious about something. That's a pattern. That's a habit. That's an addiction. And that cycle that you're on about, Billy, the reason why we get trapped in these cycles, again, it's quite deep-rooted stuff. What we're really doing, if we don't start to become more self-aware of it, if we want something different, is that we can actually even get into a pattern of getting so far and then going back to where we were and getting so far again and going back to where... That's a habit in itself.
Yeah, yeah. I think I did a podcast ages ago called Courage or Comfort, and that's where I get to this comfortable, nice little place where I can take my daughter to school, girlfriend to work, go to the local shop if need be, walk the dog. That'll do. And that's where I get. And then the courage just switches off and it's just like, we'll stay here for a bit. And then things get a bit rocky again.
But Billy, why am I getting a sense, if you don't mind me saying?
Go on.
That you're not quite happy with it somewhere. That you, is there like an undertone here where...
I'm pissed off with it. I'm fed right. up with it. I right. want to be out, like my girlfriend's from the Czech Republic. Like she's going over there on Thursday this week. Like I can't go. I ain't flying. Like I want to do things.
So again, I think the small details make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
What you got to do is you got to listen to the language that you've just used. I can't do that.
Yeah, yeah. See, I right. say it without even thinking.
Right. We've got to ask ourselves another question. How powerful is belief?
Mm-hmm. Very.
The story that we're telling ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
I can't do that. I've always been like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just who I am.
It's kind of, it's just, I resign. In my own mind, it's just like defeated.
But it's not, you know, nobody's suggesting that this is an easy pattern to break.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But like I'll tell anybody else, Billy, if you genuinely want to change a pattern, if you want to change anything, an addiction, to worry, anxiety, or any form of addiction. This is why I treat it all the same.
Mm-hmm.
What's the very first step? Self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fix it. And again, this is part of my DSA model. The fundamental part of my coaching model, DSA, is you can't fix something if you don't know what it is that you need to fix.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the first step.
Mm.
And how do you start to identify these things, Billy? It's about awareness.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I get with you as well, particularly Billy. I get a kind of conflict with that as well. I'm gonna challenge you, you arse.
Come on.
This might be your podcast, but I'm gonna challenge you. Are you happy with that?
I'm ready.
You're ready. You're ready for it.
Yeah.
All right. See, I think you are aware. Certainly, much more aware than the average.
Aware of?
Good question. And that's why I think you're aware, because you just asked that question. See what I mean? You're not going to be able to trick me, Billy. What is it that you're really afraid of?
I'm afraid of probably, I don't know, man. When I think like top of my head, it's afraid of making a fool of myself in public, probably.
And is that just something that you thought of since we've been speaking, or have you thought about it before?
No, I've thought about it before. I'm afraid of ill health as well. Like, that's a big thing for me.
This is why you do like the DP rule then, and why it actually did stand out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because I don't particularly fear any situation. I fear myself in those situations, if that makes sense. I fear what I'm either thinking or feeling, rather than what's actually happening. Like, I could be anywhere and experience the exact same things.
Okay.
But it's not like a phobia of supermarkets or motorways.
Do you feel like you're doing enough to change it?
Not in the slightest.
Okay. No. And so that is something that you are aware of?
Yeah, big time.
So the question is then why?
Because I'm lazy.
Why are you lazy?
I don't know, man. Easy life, but it's not easy. I'm an idiot.
See, this is, do you see why I'm challenging you here? I'm challenging you, Billy, because this is the conflict that I'm talking about, that I recognize in you.
Yeah.
right? And of course, you know, I've been coaching for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be stupid if the last 10 years I didn't see certain patterns, including my own personal experience. See, the conflict is that when you're aware of something, it means that you've got a choice. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's a good thing, because one of the worst places I've ever been in my life, certainly mentally, is feeling like I didn't have any choices.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I felt suicidal, and, you know, it's pretty much the worst time of my life, is feeling like, shit, I've got literally fucking no options here, right?
Yeah.
Worst time of my life. When you become more self-aware of what's really going on, it means that you've got a choice. The conflict that I'm seeing here, Billy, is that I think that you can see that there's a choice there.
Definitely. I know I have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, last thing we want to do is start comparing to other people, because again, that can cause its own anxiety and misery. There's no such thing as normal or the norm. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to go there. But given a choice, a lot of people might make a different one. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're making different choices or the same ones?
Compared to who?
An incredibly sound question to ask. Incredibly sound question. Because if you think about the question that you just asked, it's not compared to anybody, because that's exactly why I just made the point a few seconds ago.
Yeah. I make bad choices. I know that I have a choice, but for some reason I'm just not motivated. I don't want to put myself through the whatever it is that I'm going to experience when I have to go out and do whatever. I don't know. I've got it so deep rooted in my head that it's going to be a bad experience, whatever it is that I attempt to do, that it's just not worth the hassle anymore. That's where I feel like I am.
So you're using the short-term comfort of avoidance?
Yeah, yeah. Make excuses.
The interesting thing about fear in and of itself, Billy, is that fear is always worse before doing something. Mm-hmm. After we've done something. And actually, you said it earlier about the variety of different days that you've had. Sometimes you feel like you can just go out and smash it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? When you're acting like that and you're going out and you're pushing past your comfort zone and you're acting like that and you're doing it, there's always going to be that element of fear. But when you've done it, you feel pretty freaking great, right?
Yeah, fantastic.
On those days that you feel a little bit more challenged, the fear is a bit more greater, so you're using the short-term avoidance comfort.
Yep.
Right? Why are you doing that?
It's just because I don't want to experience more sensations, I guess. I fear the way that I feel.
What in particular?
I guess the dizziness. I fear like this mad dizziness, because I've experienced vertigo a few times.
Yeah.
And like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always worried that that's going to strike if I'm sitting in the car ready to go in a shop and I'm feeling a little bit dizzy. Like my thoughts are usually, what if that escalates when I'm in there? And I'm like, because if I experience vertigo in a store or 2 miles away from the car.
What's the best coping mechanism that you've ever used for that? And has it worked? Or have you tried anything?
Not particularly.
No?
No.
So my clients, in situations like that, what I do is I teach them about what the bully really is, the psychological bully that I mentioned that resides in our heads. Mm-hmm. When you are put in situations like that, Billy, where you're feeling dizzy in particular, that's the bully basically taking the piss out of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what happens is when we succumb to that, we're basically just handing over our lunch money.
Yeah.
There you go. Please just take it. Please just take my lunch money. Please just take it. Mm-hmm. And that short term avoidance and comfort we think is okay, but the bully just keeps coming back and expecting his lunch money. Mm-hmm. Right. And he keeps coming back. And then he'll want more. And then he'll want some more. And then a little bit more. So how does this translate? Well, the symptoms start to get a little bit more aggressive. They start to get a bit more widespread. They start to affect you in areas where you didn't even think they could.
Yep.
All of that is because you're allowing the bully to bully you.
I like it.
The thing I'm interested in...
Well, I don't like again, it, but yeah.
I'm very mindful here, Billy, that this isn't necessarily a coaching session. We're doing a podcast.
No, I'm not paying.
But here's... My bank details are to follow. I'm mindful of that, but the reason I like to frame it like this is, you know, for yourself and anybody else who might be stuck in the patterns that I was stuck in. It's because if I frame it a little bit more like this, if I can get you thinking or being more aware of certain things, then this is all good. So when it comes to things like the bully, I want to get your immediate thoughts and reaction to that. Have you thought about it like that before, about the fact that it might be a form of a bully inside?
Not really. I wouldn't say.
Does that invoke or change anything within you thought-wise?
Well, it makes sense. It does make sense.
Okay. So with it making sense, does it change anything?
I guess I won't find out until I'm next confronted by the bully, innit?
Are you saying you're going
to leave it? I won't know until... Yeah, yeah. I'll think about it. Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to let me know how you get on?
Of course I will.
Because here's exactly what I want you to do.
Oh, shit. Go on.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. This
is exactly what I want you to do. You mentioned earlier you've been doing some exposure stuff and things like that, right? Again, everybody's different, which means that everybody is, you know, small steps is all that counts. That's all I'm bothered about. Yeah. Even as a coach, it doesn't bother me about anything else apart from somebody feeling like they're making progression.
Yeah, of course.
That's all I'm bothered about, right? And all that takes is, for most of us, is small steps. What are small steps in relation to where you're at with things like going to the sharp or going out and things like that? Where do you feel comfortable? You said you feel relatively comfortable in the car.
Yeah, yeah. I've been good in the car for, well, always. Even though I've experienced panic attacks in the car, I don't have a problem in the bloody car.
Right. And do you find that interesting?
Yeah, extremely.
In what way?
Like, why? Why am I not afraid to get back in that car when I think to myself, like, maybe, because you hear a lot about memory association, like, oh, I won't go to Asda because I had a panic attack there once. But like, for me, that's not the case at all. Mine is more, I don't know. It's just being out of control, I guess. Maybe it's the DP rule.
Well, it's not. What it is, it's, I like to see, for me, here's the deal. I'll tell you what, I don't even mind some people saying, Carl, for fuck's sake. You're in jeopardy of oversimplifying things here. I don't care. The reason I don't care is because of how effective it is. Because when we overcomplicate things, we're less inclined to do anything about it at all.
Yeah.
When we simplify it, at least it gives us a chance to say, well, actually, that could be simple. The fact that you are able to get in the car and be okay with that is literally down to perception.
Yeah.
What it is that you believe.
Yeah.
Right. Again, another good example of this. I remember doing a BBC interview on the radio. And it shocked me, actually. I sat down and music was playing with the chat. Just before the interview, he said, you know what? He goes, Carl, you know, just before we go on air, I deal with anxiety and panic attacks. Okay. He goes, you know, the only place I feel safe is right here in the studio. And this is a guy that goes live on BBC radio, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Again, but he could go home and be sitting and watching the TV, Billy, and have a panic attack just on his sofa.
Yeah.
And yet, when he's on air to all these thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people at one time, that's where he feels most safe.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
perception.
Mm-hmm.
See, you know, we've got to understand the power of the story that we're bloody telling ourselves. These associate, you mentioned, you call it things like memory association and things like that with things like supermarkets. I would encourage anybody who's putting names to anything to just completely strip that shit out of your mind.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Strip it out.
Yeah.
Get rid of the bullshit. Declutter your freaking mind.
Mm-hmm.
And don't put a name to anything because nothing matters. Forget about it. All you need to focus on is your perception and how you're choosing to see things and the story that you are constantly telling yourself. What am I telling myself about going and doing that? What's the story that I'm telling myself? How do I feel? What's going on in my mind? What are the thoughts that are going on with that? That's the only thing you need to start to be more self-aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you start to become more self-aware of these things, it then brings up what I've been saying all along, options.
Yeah.
See, as a coach, Billy, all I can do is help give insight, few answers, and show people the door.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to them then if they want to start walking through that door, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the choices and the options come into play.
Mm.
And I completely understand exactly, you know, what's going on, Billy, because like I said to you, you know, I completely understand these patterns and these cycles.
Yeah.
And I know how frustrating. I'm putting myself back at that time when if I was having a conversation like this and I was back at that time when I used to go to the post office, oh, the bloody queue at the post office. When I used to go to the post office, I remember one specific time, Billy, I went to the post office and I swear to God, the floor actually felt like it was swallowing me up.
Yep.
Crazy, crazy sensation.
Mm-hmm.
It literally felt like the floor was sort of coming up at me, right? Really shitty sensation, horrible. Standing in the queue, that bloody queue.
Oh.
You know, looking at the ladies in front of me, just wondering, you know, shit, you know. And I did, that particular time, I did a runner.
Yeah.
So again, I understand the journey from understanding that process. But again, one of the biggest things that I want to put out there, anybody that might be listening, that might be feeling trapped in any sort of sensations or symptoms, you've got to understand that that's not your focus. Don't worry about that. I say don't worry about it. That can be a frustrating statement. Let me rephrase. Feel free to worry about it.
Mm.
Don't focus on it.
Yeah.
Why? Because that's not the focus. If you focus on these symptoms and where you're at right now, it's going to make these small steps to where you want to be more challenging. The only thing that you need to start to focus on is the next small step. What you can start to do to start to change the thought processes, start to change the habits, start to change where you are, because it's those small steps that make all the bloody difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that, actually, when I think about it, Billy, is one of the most frustrating things from where I was to being able to talk to you as I am today.
Yeah.
That transition and that journey, that's one of the most challenging things.
Mm-hmm.
Start to understand that even small changes, small steps, small decisions can make all the difference.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. We imagine that everything's got to be so big, grand. You've got to make massive changes to make progress. But no, you're right. If I made some simple decisions in just like, yes, I will go for a walk. Like, even if it's 5 damn minutes, like, that's going to make a massive difference. It is.
And you've got to want to as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to want to, you know? But I understand that the want in this process, as much as anything else, Billy, is building up with those small steps, because we're talking, yeah, you can't do anything without energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can talk to you about every technique.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I can talk to you about every technique under the sun. I can tell you about every diet supplement, every technique. I can tell you about this. I can tell you about that. All of it's for shit.
Yeah.
If you haven't got energy, you can't do anything without energy.
Yeah.
But it's this tug of war, like you mentioned, there's this cycle. Because if you don't feel like you're doing anything because you're low in energy, then that makes it even more of a challenge.
Yeah.
And that it's the breaking through that. But let's face it, Billy, you can.
Of course.
If you wanted to go out for a walk.
Yeah, yeah, right now.
You could, there's no physical limitations there, correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct.
So without physical limitation, that's an option to you. So I'm going to go back to what I was going to suggest to you about.
I was waiting for this.
Were you waiting for it? You're like, you know what?
I was just sitting here thinking.
Because maybe I do have to update him on this. Right, this bully, right?
Come on.
As soon as you start to get to the point where he's really challenging, I call it a he, you call it whatever you like, but generally we tend to think of bullies as burly blokes who take our lunch money off us.
Yep.
As soon as he starts to challenge you to the point where you're in the car, for example, and you get to a point where we keep mentioning the supermarket, he said that's not necessarily a big deal for you. But let's just say going out, let's just say any example that you've got that you want to start to go for dinner. That's a nice one because that's at least pleasurable.
Yeah.
Fucking supermarket. Who the hell wants to do that? Going for dinner, going to a restaurant, going for a nice meal.
Yeah.
Right, you go drive in the car, get out your car, and you start to get those what if type thoughts.
Yeah.
What if I start to get dizzy? What if this happens? What if that happens? The immediate self-awareness that I want you to get in that moment is I want you to know that it's the bully within you trying to bully you and take the piss out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where that conflict is with you, Billy. The one I keep mentioning. Because there's part of me that thinks that you're not a guy that maybe likes to get bullied. Am I right in that assumption?
Not especially.
Right. Why am I getting that impression then?
Oh, no, I mean, not especially. I don't like getting bullied. I don't want to be bullied.
So you're confusing me now.
Yeah, I know.
So you're telling me that you don't like to get bullied?
Of course not.
But isn't it interesting the way you went, coming back to that story again, how that could have been misconstrued either way. Anyway, don't worry about that. But it's interesting.
Yeah.
Coach, let me tell you that.
Hmm.
But generally, okay, to answer that a bit more direct, you don't like to get fucking bullied. Is
I
that
do
right?
Not. No, I fucking don't.
Then I very much suggest to you that you stop having the piss taken out of you. Because that's what's happening, by the way.
Yeah.
This bully is convincing you to place your bets on very tiny odds.
Mm-hmm. Odds that have never come true as well.
Catastrophizing.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario. How rare is that?
Very. Right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yet he's convincing you, and he's taking the absolute piss out of you. He's making you look like a fucking mug, Billy.
Bastard.
So when you get into these certain points, going out to a restaurant, just being able to live your life, go out for a nice meal, he's got you convinced to catastrophize based on all these what ifs.
Yep.
Nobody said confronting a bully is easy, Billy. But you've got to ask yourself a question. Is it any harder than living your life in fear of when he's just going to do whatever he likes, whether it be with a panic attack or symptoms or whatever it may be?
Mm-hmm.
This is how the bully operates. See, I framed panic attacks specifically, this is good for panic attacks.
Mm.
Since I framed panic attacks like the bullies that they are, because that's basically what they are. Since I've done that, I've not suffered a panic attack since.
Yeah.
And I, throughout my high anxiety, I used to have 4 or 5 a day, every day, and they'd last, you know, for a long time.
Yep.
And since I started to treat them like the bullies that they are, because if you think about what a bully is, they operate within vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Pick victims.
Yep.
High anxiety and panic operate in exactly the same way. They can't operate if you've got a confident, strong mind.
If you stand up to them, yeah, yeah.
What's the worst thing a bully doesn't like?
Somebody will give it back, man.
Confrontation.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hate it. Mm. Why? Because they want an easy life.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want an easy life. They want to just go about their business. They want to keep coming up to you and stealing your money. You don't see other bullies in the playground picking on other bullies.
No, of course not.
They're lazy bastards. They just want the victims. They want to. They get pleasure out of seeing you squirm. Here's the interesting thing about the bully that sits in our head. It's not like normal bullies. See, whereas bullies in the playground get some sick fucking joy out of picking on victims. The bullies that reside in our head, Billy, it would be very perverse to suggest that we get a kick out of bullying ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't work like that. That's not how the bully inside our heads work. It's what I mentioned earlier. It's all part of our survival instinct. There's a part of him that isn't so much of an arsehole because he's keeping us alive as much as anything else.
Yeah.
But what he's also doing is he's being a lazy bastard, because what he wants to do is he wants to keep your comfort zone as small as possible because it makes his job of keeping you alive that much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going out and doing nice things like going out for meals, going to supermarkets and basically pushing past your comfort zone, he don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
He hates it. Which is why he wants to bring you right back. And when we let him, that's precisely what he does. So what I used to do, like even though, like I said to you, the confrontation isn't necessarily easy, what I used to say is when I felt the sensations, I felt the dizziness coming on, whatever you want to call it, I used to stand there and say, do your worst.
Yeah.
Go for it. Go mm-hmm. for it. Mm-hmm. Do
your worst. Yeah, I've done that. I've done that a few times. Like when I'm feeling particularly brave. It's just not all the time, because it usually depends on how I feel, whether I'm being bullied that much or not.
Well, perhaps, you know, do you know what, Billy, that is the bit there. That's the, if you wanted like a crucial point for you, a breaking point, if you like, that's it for you. Cause do you know what? You don't get a choice.
Yeah, yeah.
When that bully's coming up to you saying, Billy, give me your fucking lunch money. hang on, not today.
Yeah, mate.
No, not today. Not, I'm not going to give it to you today because I can have a break, can't I?
Nope.
You don't get a choice, Billy.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to true confrontation and what it means to be confrontational to the bully that's basically owning you and taking the piss, you do not get a choice. It's up to you to say, do your worst, even at times when you don't feel like it. Why? Because the bully will prey on any form of weakness. That's how this works. And if at any time we let that bully in, we can have a few slips. This is what life is all about. Yeah. It's not about being perfect. It's not about having to be perfect all the time. That's bullshit. It's not what this is about. We are allowed to have challenges. We're allowed to feel scared. We're allowed to feel anxious. But what we're not allowed to do, if we want a better life, is let this shit rule us.
Because
if we do that, we are fucked. Do you know what I mean?
I follow loud and clear.
Are you ready for fucking war or what?
I guess.
So yeah, listen, you want another think... good news?
Yeah, go on.
All right, let's do a bit of good news. I'm done a lot of fighting talk, but do you want to hear the truth? The truth is you don't need to fight the bully at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because suggesting you to win a fight is like me saying that you need to shadow box and expect to win.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. You can't fight something that is naturally internally within you and expect to win that fight. It doesn't work like that.
Mm.
When you confront, when you say do your worst, it isn't to set up a fight. Again, this is the major difference between that bully in the playground.
Yeah, yeah.
Bully in the playground, you say, go fuck yourself. What? Give me your lunch money. Nah, go fuck yourself. That guy can give you a punch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm. This guy in here, he has to be a bit smarter because he can't touch you. High anxiety, panic, never been proven to harm anybody, ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? No, symptoms can be as horrible as you like. Never going to harm you.
Yeah.
Do you see where now he has to get smarter to trick you? Because he can't touch you.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even need to fight him. That's the beautiful thing of this. You don't even need to fight. What you do need to do is confront.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a major difference. And if you start to become more aware of this difference, Billy, you start to get a lot more of a psychological advantage.
Mm.
because the deal is with this bully is if you're smart, which you are, if you're smart,
I'll take that.
He's smarter.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotta remember that. Mm-hmm. He's a trick. I tell you what, think of the work. Have you seen like Catch Me If You Can, the film?
Don't think so.
Oh, you got to watch that. Leonardo DiCaprio, where he plays Frank Abagnale, the con man. You've not seen that?
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, my word. Do you like films?
Yeah, yeah, I love them.
That's an immediate stop. That is an unbelievably good film.
Yeah.
Not as good as The Matrix, but it's way up there.
I haven't seen that either.
Right, I think this podcast is over then.
I've got some research to do.
Then let me tell you the order. Matrix is number one. Right, that's the immediate stop. And okay. then shortly after that, Catch Me If You Can.
I'm sure I watched a film and they were talking about Catch Me If You Can. I can't remember what it was.
You know, it's the point I was making here, he plays a guy called Frank Abagnale.
Mm.
And it's a true story. It's unbelievable what this guy did. He pretended he was like 18 when he did this. He pretended to be a pilot. And got away with it. He was flying planes, doing the lot, right? He pretended to be a lawyer, got away with that. He pretended to be a doctor, got away with that. I'm serious. This guy was like incredible. So he was forging all these checks. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he got caught, but did a deal with the US government to work for them to, you know, do these check frauds and identify them.
Right.
Anyway, amazing film. The point I was making here is if you're intelligent, if you're clever, then the bully is like that con man.
Yeah, yeah.
Smart. Yeah. He's going to trick you. He's
one step ahead.
Oh, man. He is like, he's insanely good at what he does. But like anything like that, self-awareness is always your advantage. Mm. As long as you're aware of it, you've got that choice that I mentioned.
I'll definitely, it will definitely be on my mind next time I come to confront something. Definitely. I'll definitely think about that. You've sown a seed.
The only way I can sow a seed like that, Billy, with somebody like yourself, is if you want that seed to be sowed.
Oh, I do. I do.
And if you want that seed to be sowed, it means that The reason why I do it like this, and I do it with my clients, and I help them overcome panic attacks and high anxiety like this, is because there are certain things within us that can get us to where we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Anger is part of that emotion.
Mm.
Determination is another word to call this as well. Yeah. You need to be as determined as anything else. You need to invoke a spirit, invoke some fire within you, some fucking fire in your belly that, you know, is there, but has been doused.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with all that bullshit.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, definitely. I'm just, it's like the way it is. It's the way I am. I've always been like this, doused, fucking victim, bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, cut that shit. Because do you know what? Small steps.
Yeah, yeah.
Choices, perception, confrontation. These are things. Let me tell you, Billy, you want some changes? You want to see some difference? I'm serious. This is, like I said, my bank details are following.
Shit. Okay.
No, do you feel like you've had a session?
Yeah, it's good. I'm hoping people watching this are going to go along that journey as well. And think about what you're saying. It makes perfect sense. Yeah, yeah.
So am I. Listen, you can frame this however you like. Frame it however you like. Any challenge you want to start to overcome, there are certain things that you need to invoke within yourself.
Mm.
There's a pattern. There's a journey, if you like. One of the very first steps, I mentioned perception, but please don't forget energy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, we can talk till the bloody cows come home.
Mm.
Right? But if people are struggling with energy, with sleep, with not eating properly. As a coach, that's one of the first things that I'm looking at.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that something that we should be thinking about?
It is, because again, one of the quick solutions, because I like speed, time is of the friggin' essence, isn't it, Billy? Eh?
Too right.
When I used to look at food and think, oh, God, I can't face that, you know, couldn't face it. A quick solution to that was, again, dietary, do the doctor bit. I'm not a doctor. I cannot advise you on dietary supplements or diets in general. Protein shakes.
Yeah.
You know, I used to find a bit of a short-term solution with those. Because, again, I know when we get into those deep cycles of anxiety and feeling low and low energy, eating can go out the window for a lot of us as well. I know how deep that can go as well. So when I weren't eating properly, when I weren't sleeping properly, when I used to get a few hours sleep, wake up red-eyed looking like a frigging zombie from The Walking Dead,
yep,
and feel like it, when I used to feel like that, I used to look at food and, you know, but protein shakes were a good short-term solution. You know, as soon as you can start to eat a little bit better, you know, you should always aim to eat as good as you can, obviously with fruit, veg, whatever. But in regards to the energy piece, things like protein shakes, you can just drink them dead quick and a lot of them can act like a meal.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, food is fuel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to eat properly. And again, if people are concerned about things like sleep issues, again, that's a big deal here. Huge issue, right? Sleep is such a huge part of this cycle that we've been talking about. You've mentioned it as well, right?
Yeah.
Sleep patterns and getting sleep properly. It's such a huge, huge part of it. But I will put that into the anxiety symptoms bracket of to suggest that you shouldn't focus on it.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, it becomes incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
It really does. When we think to ourselves, oh, you know, I must get that sleep. I must get them hours of sleep. Yeah. I must. It frustrates the shit out of us, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it sabotages my day. Yeah, yeah, exactly. If I only get, say, 6 hours sleep, then my day is ruined. Even if I slept well, or it makes no difference.
The negative. Do you know what? But the thing is, we're all different. Again, for me, you know, if I'm not getting 7-8 hours of sleep a night, you know, I feel it.
Yeah, same.
And again, that's just me, you know, and I know a lot of people are similar, but I know people that can get 5 hours sleep and they're good to go, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy.
So again, let's not compare. Let's not say this is right or that's right or this is right. You just got to go on how you're feeling.
Mm.
When you wake up, how do you feel? You know, and gauge it on a lot of how you're feeling. But in regards to sleep issues and general anxiety-related symptoms and all these things, remove your focus from that and just aim to take small steps where you can take control, because that's the only thing that you truly need to focus on.
Spot on.
That improves everything. Cool. It's a byproduct. It's a byproduct. The byproduct here, you take small steps, you take action. That's basically what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
We can do all this, talk as much as we like. Mm-hmm. We've got to take action. When we start to take action, we start to move forward. We start to build confidence. We start to see things with a different perspective. Again, this is the journey. It's all good.
Yeah.
Right? Do we face another challenge? You bet your sweet ass we do.
Yeah. Right?
But we've got more confidence to start to deal with things a little bit differently. Your energy starts to build. Your confidence starts to build. Your perspective starts to change. Like I mentioned, that's the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how quickly we can all change if we wish.
And on that bombshell. Perfect. No, good. I like it. Super, super smart. We cannot have this episode without mentioning health anxiety and the coronavirus. We've got to go there.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, it's actually, I've been getting more and more nervous by the day I did a video on it maybe 2-3 weeks ago when it was like, I don't think there was many cases over here.
Well, that's when it just sort of started a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And I was just like, you know, wash your hands, you'll be all right. But the school, there's, where my daughter goes to school, there's a junior school attached to it. And one of one of the members of staff there has just been confirmed diagnosed with it. So like they've closed that school, but they haven't closed my daughter's school. But it's just made me start, the alarm bells are ringing. Because I don't know why, but I think I'm one of the vulnerable ones.
Mm-hmm. In defined by what?
I'm old. I don't know, man.
So unless I need to put my glasses back on, Billy.
It's the bully. The bully is telling me that I have an underlying health condition. That's right.
The underlying health condition being that you're old.
No, I don't know what it is. It's some disease that hasn't been discovered yet.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I get that.
You know the one. You know.
Yeah. Maybe a couple of them, right? I'm with you. Okay. Is how you're feeling normal?
I would say probably the majority of people are getting a bit nervous about it.
Because again, this is the very confusing thing here, isn't it? Again, I've been overwhelmed by the amount of people that have contacted me about this specifically. Mm. I did a what I call a Carl's clinic. I do a Carl's clinic on a Sunday, which is a live session, and that was on coronavirus yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about it, and I didn't actually mention it. It's a good point, but just based on what you mentioned, we get very confused about worry is normal. You know, and when we're dealing with high anxiety, and we've dealt with it as an issue, or it's become a problem.
Yeah.
We tend to categorize all worry and all anxiety as being abnormal. Mm-hmm. Whereas what you're going through right now, Billy, considering what you've just said to me, what's irrational about that?
Yeah, no, there is nothing.
No, I mean, and again, the reason I can frame it like the way that I am, Billy, is because we're having this conversation now. Yeah. It hasn't limited you to a point where you are so afraid to, you know, live your life in general. And mm-hmm. and that's, see, yeah, again,
I've not changed anything. Nothing that I'm doing. Like, I'm not washing my hands for 20 seconds. So as much.
Exactly.
Weird.
This is it. So it comes down to that old adage. What is it? Don't judge people by what they say. Judge people by what they do. Mm. And when we actually frame that on ourselves, maybe I shouldn't judge myself so much on what I'm thinking, because maybe what I'm thinking might be irrational, but I'm worried like a lot of other people. Mm. Maybe I should judge myself a little bit more on what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. I'm not, well, buying, like you said, you're not panic buying toilet really rolls. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see a pile of toilet rolls behind you. Yeah, I'm not going to show you mine in the corner.
That's why they're all out of stock.
I've posted something real funny on my social media today, on my Facebook and my Instagram.
Yeah.
It's been real popular, actually. Lots of people sharing it. And it's, I had it sent by somebody. It made me laugh. I had to share it. And it's just something like a public notice, and it's outside a shop or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's a shopkeeper or somebody has put this message outside saying about how dumb people are being. You know, we've got a shortage of toilet rolls. People are going to be dying in their houses. We've lots of toilet rolls around them, but with no food.
Yeah.
You need to read the whole thing, because it's actually really funny.
We'll put a link in the description.
Yeah.
All your socials.
Yeah, it's
apart from Twitter.
Yeah, well, you're going to find our job doing that, because I'm not on it. we spoke about that, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah, like I say, Ricky Gervais sums that up best when he says it's like reading every toilet wall possum. Really does sum that up, hence why I don't use it. We've got to put things in, again, it's down to this time perspective, isn't it, Billy? You know, put things into perspective a little bit. Judge ourselves on what we're doing. Are we stopping it as a balance, isn't there? If we stop living our lives, if we stop doing these things, if we start doing things in excess, and maybe we need to start becoming more self-aware of what's really going on when these things happen. and actually start to question ourselves a little bit more if that's happening, and add a little bit of a dash of rationale into all of it, which, you know, at times like this can be a little bit more challenging. But do you know, the best example I used yesterday, Billy, is this, and I'd love people to take note of this. It got me thinking. I was on the motorway the other day, and you know these smart motorways?
Yes, very smart.
Where they've got these variable speed limits,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Do you know why they do it like that?
No, I assume it's traffic management, so there's not a build-up. Yeah,
exactly right. So the idea is, with variable speed limits, it keeps everybody at a constant.
Yeah.
Rather than stop-start, mm-hmm. everybody trying to pile forward and then just getting into a big jam.
Yeah.
Right, that's what we're doing with coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing is we're panicking. Panic is the epidemic in itself.
Yeah.
Right. We're all on this motorway, but we're all speeding to try and get to where we want to be. And the direct result of that is that we're all being fucked by it.
Mm.
And if we all stuck to logic, rationale, mm-hmm. again, the analogy here is these variable limits, whatever they may be, mm-hmm. then we're all going to get to where we want to be in a more logical, rational state.
Mm-hmm.
The more everybody keeps rushing and panicking and doing it like this, the worse it's going to make it for everybody, including yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So look, take that as you like, but really it comes down to this choice again. What do we do? Make the choice to focus on the news, catastrophize about what's going on, focus on the news, get our daily dose of fear mongering, or do we live our lives? That's your choice.
Yeah.
As best as you can. You know, it doesn't mean you're not going to worry. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be anxious. Everybody is. Mm. Anxiety, bloody issues or not, everybody's in a pretty similar boat. Everybody feels very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So it pays to remember that and to get some form of reassurance from it.
Sounds good.
What do you
think? No, I agree. I think the news is going over the top, and it's like you can't put the news on without it being...
Do you know what? I said this in the podcast though, Billy, right? I said this. Here's where we've got to take that responsibility that I mentioned earlier.
Mm.
See, they're just doing their job.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a business.
Yeah.
Right? They're in competition with each other.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not getting your attention, then they go out of business.
Mm.
How do you get somebody's attention? Fear.
Yeah, yeah.
Fear. I don't, you know, headline. Corona's going to do this. It's going to, could kill less amount of people, could do this. Compare that to, I think we'll be all right. What news is going to get? I mean, you might click this one over here a few times just to get a bit of reassurance.
Yeah, but you'll definitely be more focused on the other bugger.
And what do you think the news people want? In other words, Billy, you know what? They need our attention, so we have to take responsibility for the fact that we're fucking giving it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do you know, people get a bit surprised. I haven't watched the news for years.
Right.
I intentionally don't watch it. Like, I try to intentionally not use Twitter.
Yeah.
I intentionally, do you know, the last time I bought a newspaper was 2 weeks ago. And, you know, the only reason I did that, it was the Telegraph, and it was because I was in it.
Oh.
Apart from that,
yeah,
I ain't bought a newspaper for years.
No, I don't.
And the reason I say I don't intentionally watch the news is because you can't help it, really. You just pick up your phone. I don't watch the news. And I didn't even ask for it. And my phone flashed up with the latest news on. I was like, I don't even want to fucking see this. And it's coming up on my phone.
Yeah. There's no escape.
And some people might think, oh, you don't watch the news. Oh, ignorant. I tell you what, I get to know. I know all about this coronavirus and I don't watch the news. How's that work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it happens with pretty much everything else as well.
Yeah,
if I need to know something, you get to know it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need to get my 5 doses of fear every day. And I'll tell you what, since I've not been doing that, Billy, I feel a lot better for it.
Yeah, I should probably take a leaf out of that book, man. I check the Sky News app every morning and night when I'm in bed. That's my thing.
Why, That's why you fucked.
How sad.
Yeah. No, that's why you fucked. I'll tell you why. Tell you why. Again, it would be doing an injustice if I just sat here ranting about how fucked you are without telling you the science behind it. Have a look at something called theta. T-H-E-T-A. Have you heard of it?
Nope.
It's a state of mind that we're in just before we go to sleep and when we wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's our most vulnerable state of mind.
Really?
If theta. You are flicking the news at those points, that's sitting with you all day. And you don't even know it.
Mm-hmm. Theta.
How's that?
Theta.
Theta. Theta. It's a state of mind.
Yeah.
Just before you go to bed. And what do 70-odd% of smartphone users do when they wake up? Straight to their smartphones.
Yeah.
Straight to their phones. Pick it up. If you're not mm-hmm. checking social media, if you're not checking your email, checking news headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And whether we know it or not, what that's doing is it's carrying through our day, even if it's not consciously, it's carrying subconsciously.
Yeah.
And that's what's the undertone of anxiety is. Even when we feel it and we don't know it.
Mm.
I don't watch the news.
It's time to delete Rupert Murdoch from my phone.
That can never be a bad thing.
No, you're right.
You're right. That stuff like that can never be a bad thing.
Mm.
Let me tell you that, Billy. Never be a bad thing. It's a business. I'd like to see again, how much is that guy worth?
More than me.
Right? He's worth that for a reason.
Mm.
Same reason why we're not worth it mm-hmm. and a lot of other people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, how do you become worth that sort of money? The only way, attention.
Yeah.
And when you realize that attention is brought mainly through fear, again, give this self-awareness gives mm-hmm. you another option if you choose to have it. Mm-hmm. Self-awareness is kick-ass.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you that. Massive part of my journey. Let me tell you that.
I like it.
Do you like self-awareness?
I do now.
You can't buy it, unfortunately. You can't nip down to your local shop and say, can I have half a pound of self-awareness, please?
Damn. It's probably out of stock anyway.
It'll be like common sense. It won't be on the shelves.
Mm.
But what you can do is you can start to just decide that you are actively wanting to become a bit more aware of things, not be, a sheep over a lot of stuff, including the fucking news. Why do we watch the news? Because we feel like we're going to be ill-informed or we're going to be ignorant. But you know what the other main reason is, Billy? And let's link this podcast all up to what you were saying earlier.
Come on.
What I was saying earlier. Should we link it all up?
Yeah, do it.
Why do we watch the news? Because we're worried about what other people think.
Mm-hmm. There you have it. Explosion.
That's another one. Another explosion. Boom.
He's on fire. I think we about covered it, didn't we?
You tell me, Billy. Your podcast.
Yeah, I'm good, man. This is only the second episode. Thoroughly enjoyable.
Enjoy it?
Yeah, massively. Massively. I'm looking forward to actually watching it back. Then I'm going to take these things on board. And I shall report back to you.
The thing is, as well, I think what's really strong, certainly in this scenario, Billy, is that, and again, this is part of my journey, although I wasn't lucky enough to get any sort of decent fucking guidance, we all know what sort of information was out there.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'd have had some decent insight, some insight that actually made a difference, the exciting thing about where you could potentially go with it is it could be part of your journey in relation to your journey and like you always have, sharing it with other people.
Yeah, definitely. I'm similar to you in that I had some pretty horrific advice early doors. Like I spent a lot of money on not so good things, bad advice.
Listen, it happens.
Exactly.
And it's this thing that I mentioned earlier. do we be victims or do we take responsibility? Well, I'll tell you what path and avenue I took, and that's what made the difference.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I like it.
I like your mic. What is it?
It's just a cheap, shitty thing off Amazon.
No, but it's worked really well, though.
Yeah.
You know, like when you do these when you do these interviews, you can hear the quality of the sound, and that's good.
Yeah.
If it was cheap, that's a decent one. If it was cheap,
I'll have to have a look. I've had it for years, man. It's the mic stand's terrible. It's got a mind of its own.
So just some of them, you get a lot of kickback and feedback on like the S's and P's and T's and stuff like that. But that sounds pretty good.
It's good news. I'll keep using it. I was actually looking at upgrading.
It's as good as anything I've heard on this.
I'll keep it. Thank you. So, where can people find your work? CarlVernon.com, of course.
Yeah, CarlVernon.com. You're going to find all the bits on there, including books, coaching, membership, all the bits on my DSA coaching model, and all the social links on there. So, like I said, you'll find me everywhere but the news and Twitter.
And I do recommend Anxiety Rebalance, especially the audiobook, especially now you can put a face to the voice.
Yeah.
It's all the difference.
Oh, it does. It does. I like putting faces to voices for sure. And it does make a difference. And no, thanks for the recommendation. Like I say, I don't mind telling you, Billy, I'm still bowled over by the amount of feedback that I still get today. You know, the very start of this podcast, I mentioned the journey that I've been on from just sharing my personal experience in that book, and the journey that I've been on since that, and it still blows my mind how many people can share my personal experience, and how many people I've been able to touch and help is amazing, and obviously with yourself as well. So good job and well done with what you're doing.
Thanks, man. Keep up the good work, and we will speak again, no doubt.
The door is open, my friend.
Fantastic. And that's it from episode 2, I guess, of The Breakdown.
Good name.
You broke me down.
Good name. I like the pun.
Thank you.
As long as it has a more perspective towards a breakdown of getting good insight than having a frigging breakdown in general.
Hopefully. I'm going to go one way or the other. That's where I'm at.
Hey, ain't we all, pal? Ain't we all?